It is Tuesday, September 8th, and this is Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester and Drew Medtock of Irish Illustrated. Guys, we waited 281 days to watch Wisconsin and Notre Dame, so we're going to dedicate an entire podcast to discussing what happened in Lambeau Field on Sunday. We'll get to Rice on Thursday, but Drew Medtock, quickly, there are a couple crucial injury updates for Notre Dame and one guy who might return, at least in a small role this week.
Right, yeah, Bronte Johnson and Jason Onye will be out with left foot or ankle injuries for, as Marcus Freeman put it, multiple weeks. So I think Bronte Johnson's might be a little more severe than Onye, so expect him to be out a little longer. But obviously those are two starters. I mean, Bronte Johnson's a guy we've talked about as potential All-American. He's one of the best tacklers in the country, as I always like to say. Losing him's definitely a big loss. And then Kingston Viliamu-Asa, he looked really good in fall camp. We thought we might see him in the season opener. He was questionable all week and then didn't play. Marcus Freeman said he's trending towards being able to play, but I think we'll see how that actually turns out. They don't need him back for Rice. They are fine at linebacker. The ultimate objective for all these guys who are injured right now is to hopefully have them back for BYU when the season really starts getting underway.
Tim Priester, Marcus Freeman stole every writer's line. I think he was prepped for that one. Calling it a tale of two halves when he came out for his post-game press conference. It sure was, but very rarely do you have the inefficient, kind of plodding boringness of one half and absolutely perfect three drives, three touchdowns, 21 points, plus a defensive touchdown second half. So that's an all-time tale of two halves for a season opener.
Yeah, you'd love to, you know, plow him from start to finish, but if you have a choice, you'd rather play well. You have a choice, you'd rather finish strong. And really, you know, we've seen many games where Notre Dame has not corrected like that and has not been able to finish with a flourish. And really, by the end of the Wisconsin game, I mean, Notre Dame had taken control physically, which says something, because whatever you think about Wisconsin football, remember that it's a physical program and they generally stay true to form. But, you know, Notre Dame was able to really take control. And then the fourth quarter, you know, that's when Aeneas Williams got 62 of his 90 yards and Notre Dame had to football for about 10 and a half minutes. So they did what they had to do. Nobody's happy with the way they started. There are blemishes. All of the questions are about the blemishes, and rightfully so, because it was all the things that we talked about post-game and wrote about here in the last 24 to 48 hours. So, but hey, much better to finish strong against a Wisconsin team. And as I said after the game, you know, it could have been, you could have won by 14 or 13 or whatever, and they ended up winning by four touchdowns, which is what you're looking for when you get a slow start.
Yeah, I think it's good too. I mean, we don't see it this way, but I think the coaching staff does look at, well, there's a lot of things for them to learn and get into. And sometimes they like to have those, you don't want to see those ugly moments, but having some things where like, okay, this is, we really need to drill down is maybe better for a game like this, especially as you pointed out, they won by four touchdowns. They still got the big win over a Big Ten program that they wanted, and they also have a lot they can take from it, is the optimistic spin on this game.
You know, I asked Marcus Freeman specifically about a lack of downfield aggressiveness and kind of figuring CJ Carr took what the defense gave him and how they can help strike a balance between always taking what the defense gives you and dictating a little bit more to the defense. And I do believe Freeman has answered that he did exactly what we want. We want to score points. He was almost perfect in getting us down the field in the second half, or he was perfect in the second half. He made the right reads. But what I think is important, Tim Priester, is you have to strike a balance when you start getting some better teams on your schedule, that you can't settle for everything. And they knew they could settle for it against Wisconsin because they all probably figured we could score 24 and get out of here.
Yeah, well, look, if you have more dynamic wideouts, you'll push the ball down the field more too. And suddenly we're all kind of looking at this, and I wouldn't say it's a reevaluation. We talked about it during camp that, okay, Jordan Faison and you're still not really sure coming out of that. But and I wrote about this today with Tail of the Tape. It's just going to be really hard for CJ Carr to compete for the Heisman because I just don't think he's going to put up the numbers. Notre Dame's in 12 personnel most of the time. They have some questions about wide receiver. He's fundamentally sound and is going to do the best thing for the team. So he's going to check down and he's not going to throw for as many yards. But who really cares about that? It's about progressing and getting some of these other guys to really chip in and be consistent like Jordan Faison is.
We have a related question, and I think it's not only wide receivers, because we'll have some wide receiver talk throughout this podcast, but Billy Hoyle, great name, said it's great to talk about football, but Dembrock looked like he wanted to protect the offensive line last night. Drew, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think his trust was with that unit going into the game?
Probably lower than we'd like it to be, maybe a 5 or a 6. I think just with with what we saw out of Styles Prescott, I know he might be a more talented or healthier body than Sullivan Abshire right now, but I don't know if they had a ton of confidence in him. And just the way they used Cooper Flanagan and the tight ends, like, they still don't seem to fully trust them to do things on their own in short yardage yet. So they're still bringing him in to, I guess, be there to assist with the guard. So it does seem a little bit like, at least to start the game, especially, they were a little timid, and especially with their right side, because you should absolutely trust Ashton Craig and Anthony Knapp outside of Craig's false start. I think they both played a really good game.
Tim, I don't know what Denbrock's level of confidence was pregame, but I know what it was after the third snap when
shrunk
when Sebastian Cheeks hit CJ Carr. You know, one of those kind of hits as he's throwing that scares you, because you never know exactly what's going to happen to the arm, Carson Beck, you know, those kind of things. But yeah, he was conservative. Again, I want to reiterate this, and I don't have the exact answer, but I want to reiterate this. CJ Carr checks plays at the line of scrimmage. So we think we know the play that Mike Denbrock called, but many times CJ Carr changes it because he sees something that he likes better, and Denbrock wants him to do that. But I think sometimes we assume too much about the original play call, and when you got a guy like CJ Carr, he could be making the decision to change it, and then there's a breakdown in some other fashion after that.
Well, I'd be curious too, because Denbrock still has say in what he's able to change it too. Like, it's not like he goes in there and can check to any play in the playbook. So I do wonder, if the checks are conservative or things like that, because I think that is an interesting point, that maybe if they're going to get out of something, the run plays are a little more conservative, and that's what Carr was going to, or something like that.
What they did find during the game was that Nolan James and Aeneas Williams are their next best options at receiver, as pass catchers right now, behind Jordan Faison. Tim, we joked during the game, it's like, you're like, man, we knew those guys could do it. I'm like, yeah, great. They're supposed to be augmenting the passing game, not becoming the passing game. You don't want Nolan James to have, oh, he was split out wide. You're like, well, we know he's good at that. I'm like, I know, but I want someone else out there.
Point taken. Absolutely. We got a good laugh out of that at that time during the game, but I do want to, and this wasn't my thought. This was suggested to me. What about Nolan James as a slot receiver? Theo Riddick like, because, and again, let's not overreact to one game. Yeah. I mean, Nolan James is still a running back. I get that. But man, when he's in open space, he's really dynamic. When you make him run through a line of scrimmage, being the size that he is, it's a little bit more difficult. So if you can get him the football in space, he's really, really dynamic. You're going to continue to see him in the passing game split out. I don't, you know, Riddick was more of a slot guy. So I just think that Mike Denbrock, there's a real challenge here. He needs to be creative. He needs to come up with the best ways to accentuate the talent that they have. And Mike Brown has to do a tremendous job in continuing to push forward and develop receivers, because right now they've got a lot to learn.
I don't think I had on my bingo card, though, that would be trying to replace the Great House Graham slot duo with Nolan James after 1 week. Like, they need Mylon Graham or Jaden Greathouse to hit.
Absolutely.
They absolutely need it. There's no two ways around it.
I would say especially Mylon Graham, because I think physically, athletically, that's the guy with the highest upside there.
And before I get to defense, Drew, they trusted Micah Gilbert plenty, because he played almost as many snaps as Jordan Faison when I went through that. Every snap counts. He was two snaps fewer than Jordan Faison. You would not have guessed that going in. Jerome Bettis Jr. became his backup for two snaps, but he did a good job blocking Micah Gilbert, but they could use a little bit. You know, Micah Gilbert's one of the guys we said ran his route too short on 3rd and 6, and the pass is broken up. He maybe could have caught it if he boxed out a little bit better, as a veteran receiver would have. But Tim Priest or Drew Medtalk, they're going to need something out of Micah Gilbert in the passing game, because you can't just sit and wish that, you know, it can't all be checked down to your boundary receiver.
Yeah, he did have 3 catches for 34 yards. So he wasn't completely invisible, but I don't remember. I had to look back and remember he had three catches.
I remember one.
Yeah. Most of those didn't stand out, to your point. So he's certainly not the presence that a Malachi Fields was last year or anything like that. So they, as you guys have just pointed out, they need somebody else to step up. He at least did maybe more than those other two receivers that we put in the top four. But, and I agree, Mylon Graham just seems like he has the athleticism and all those things to be a real game changer and do a lot of the things we see Jordan Faison do. And if you have two of those guys on the field or somebody more comparable, I think that makes a big difference. But maybe Mikey Gilbert can get a little bit more confidence. You know, it still was a physical team. He showed some things, and maybe that will start to build over the season, especially if he stays healthy.
One of those three was notable. It was kind of a deep in that went for 18 yards.
18 yarder, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, you know, you need more of that. You do need a little bit more of that. And Marcus Freeman pointed out, like, I'm going to ask Gadooly about this tomorrow. What they were giving us were some of the deep ends and some of the deep field side crosses. If that's all they're going to give you, Norheim's going to have to hit those, because you can't have you're not always going to have perfection on three. You get the ball three times in the second half. And I know it's because of their ability to maintain possession of the football, but you're not always going to be able to pick up third and two. They were 4 for 5 on third and short, fourth and short. It gets stiffer when you win. We used to say this for Notre Dame basketball, Tim. Remember, if they have to be absolutely perfect because they don't get anything free. Like, they had to work for everything against a team like North Carolina. Well, last year they didn't have to work for everything. They just handed the ball to these two guys.
Yeah, and it's really unfair of us, but I'm guilty of it. I see Aeneas Williams carry the football, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, it was just so different last year. So there's an adjustment period there as we consider the running. But you're right, Tim, they've got to come up with something to really spark it. And that's why I say Mike Denbrock and Mike Brown have to do some of their best coaching right now.
Not perfect because of one bust, but very good, as we expected, was Notre Dame's defense. If not for a Jaden Sanders feeling his oats and thinking he was about to take one back after a couple good plays, Notre Dame might have had a 41-6 win there. But that was a bad mistake. Jaden Sanders beaten for a stop-and-go touchdown in the old schoolyard play. Defense was very good, Tim. It didn't feel like they dominated the line of scrimmage, but Freeman kind of had an explanation about that today, too.
Well, I want you to talk about that, but I want to comment on something that you said in your grade story about the impression about the running game, the Wisconsin running game. I think that, you know, how you feel when you're watching the game, right, and the reality of the statistics. And I felt it too. And I'm going to tell you that there was one running play that I think influences the way we thought about what Wisconsin did in the first half running the football. Not that they ran all over Notre Dame, but there was a 3rd and 6, and Abu Sama gained 7 yards on that play and kept the chains moving. Do you know why they gained 7 yards on that play? Because Jalen Snead ran into the pile and didn't fill the gap that he needed to fill. And it was right there for him to fill, and he would have stopped and he would have punted. And I think their longest run was 8 yards, and that was Dupree, the backup. I don't even remember when that was. Sama's longest run was 7 yards. They did a good job against the run, but there were just a couple plays in the first half that kept the chains moving for a little bit and gave you that feeling that they weren't doing a great job stopping the run. But overall, they did an excellent job. 2.2 yards per carry.
Unfortunately, Notre Dame's longest run was also just 16 yards, and they had one of those. That's why it was a bit of a slog as we watched that game. But the second, obviously, Drew Mentok, you mentioned the highest graded player is Francis Brew. I would just go ahead and agree with Drew that it was probably Leonard Moore, if you know what you're doing when you're grading these things, if you watch Leonard Moore play football. But it was good to see Brew. Teyon Gray made an impact. Brew made an impact. And Marcus Freeman noted of Bryce Young, it was his best game. And there were 30 dropbacks by Colton Joseph. 12 of them were quick game. That means you can't get a pressure. 12 were real dropbacks. They got pressure on 7 and 2 sacks. So there's 3 plays where they didn't get a pressure, where they felt like they should get a pressure. Because you also felt, watching the game, they're not pressuring Colton Joseph. But it wasn't the type of game to pressure the quarterback either.
Yeah, exactly. And some of that's also just part of Wisconsin's game plan. They're taking away certain things from what they can do offensively because they know, or probably believe, Notre Dame could get after the passer a little bit more if they let Colton Joseph drop back. And that's also not his game, too. I mean, we talked about he's a runner. They're going to try and do different things with him. But we saw, too, what you mentioned, Bryce Young, on one of the plays where they did drop back and he got a pressure, and that led to a pick six, which pretty much ended the game, too. So as soon as they felt like they needed to start putting him, Colton Joseph, in those positions, Notre Dame started wreaking havoc, and we saw that later in the game too. So I think that is a, probably a more optimistic approach, and I think it's probably more valid too than some of the other things, where I do think the pass rush and the defensive line probably played better than it might look in the stat sheet.
It would have been, I mean, it's foolish if you make your pass rush on Colton Joseph a jailbreak.
Yeah,
you're gonna get burned. And they did a tremendous job of really limiting him. His longest run was 5 yards. Is that right?
Yeah, he had a really nice play. I don't know if I was talking to you or Drew about it, where he got away a little bit to the right side and immediately threw about a 18-yard.
That was beautiful.
But Adon Shuler made a great tackle on the player, yeah, and breaking up the pass. That was a gorgeous play. And that's what Notre Dame was protecting against. Colton Joseph in space. Don't let him beat you there, because he's not going to beat you in the pocket. I think it's just people think they didn't get pressure. I mean, the plan to get pressure there would have been a dumb plan. They held but one touchdown on a terrible, terrible mistake by Jaden Sanders that never should have happened. And there's no way Aaron Henry was sitting there and Chris Ashby sitting there thinking, we got to be careful of Jaden Sanders in man coverage because he tends to bite on these things. I think he just bit and he lost.
Well, he gained a lot of confidence from the previous series, and then Aaron Henry sent him back out there, and you understand why, because there was a battle with him and McKinney in preseason. And I still believe McKinney's a good football player. He made a really, really bad mistake. Sanders made a really bad mistake. I think I mentioned after the game, I mean, that's something that we were aware of, that he was guilty of it at Michigan. So you have to be careful. But the two passes broken up back to back are pretty big time plays. So you don't give up on a guy in the first game of the season. You don't disregard everything that you've seen in the spring and preseason camp. He's done a lot of good things. So they got a good situation going there. And McKinney got caught up in some, you know, trips, some bunches, some bunch formations.
That was a great play too. That was a beautiful play.
Oh my God. And those are very, Jason Garrett mentioned it. I mean, those are difficult plays. How do you beat man? Well, you bunch it and you put three guys there and try to confuse them with all the guys crossing off the snap of the football. And McKinney got caught in a couple of those, but not the one that really counted.
Yeah. I feel like Sanders is a little more aggressive and maybe physical. So I think you saw that too. And at some points, you know, that burned him, and he missed a couple tackles as well. But I think, yeah, I agree. You have time to kind of keep getting both of those guys reps and getting up to speed. And it's always going to be hard when, I mean, I know that busted coverage was bad, but they're also just getting compared to Leonard Moore at all times. And Christian Gray, we didn't really even talk about him much because he did well in the slot too. So you're just talking about a third-year starter who is a former top 100 prospect and the best cornerback in the country. And those two are going to probably get picked on more just out of necessity.
I'm surprised Moore didn't make that pick along the Notre Dame sideline. Yeah. It was difficult, and he was grabbed. I mean, it was made difficult, but I still, when I watched the replay, I thought, man, I really thought that he was going to come down with that.
It's unfortunate because those little plays like that give you 6 interceptions instead of 3. And that's what secures a full forward for you when it goes along. Before we go to the second segment, we do have a question from Irish Carbomb. How does the defensive tackle rotation change this week? Be interesting without Jason Onye, because they adhered to it. It was Onye Mukum, Gray Brew, Hughes Sevilano, repeat all the way through for the next 3 series. They did not deviate until Onye was hurt. And then obviously they had to deviate because they had 5 instead of 6. But Priester, it was not overly hot. It was not overly humid. It's not like they had to play Hughes and Sevilano. They clearly want to play Hughes and Sevilano.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. It's a long season. And, you know, while I think Teyon Gray moves into the starting lineup, I saw 18 snaps, 4 tackles. That's a pretty good
effort. Yeah.
That's a pretty good tackle efficiency right there. You know, the thing about Teyon Gray is when a running back is coming through the line of scrimmage and that dude's standing there, your initial reaction is, I have to try to go around him. I'm not going to go through him. And then you get team defense and rally to the football. So he probably moves in the starting lineup. I think
Brew will move into the starting
lineup. Well, he could. Okay. So next to, next to Mukum, I wasn't sure how the question was being asked, whether it was with regard to Brew outplaying Mukum, or do you start Brew next to Gray? I'm not sure. And you could be right. I mean, I'm just considering both options there.
They do have on the depth chart Brew or Gray at that other spot. And then
okay, good.
Brew also backing up Mookum on the depth chart too. So it might be maybe Mookum or Brew just has more position flexibility too. And maybe that will definitely come in handy with it being down to five in the rotation instead of six too, because they're going to have to mix and match a little more.
Having you saying that, I agree with you, Tim, that's how they're going to go.
Also, Drew made a good point. Was it during instant analysis or prior? I think it was during instant analysis that they would probably be moving Chris Burgess up into this rotation, but he is out with an injury. And so I think you'll see five for a while. But if there's ever a time to work someone in that is next, it might be Rice, because we'll get on to Rice on Thursday. But, you know, they run a shotgun form of option, and you might need a little bit of athleticism in their defensive tackle. But I think five guys will be fine for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I know we're not talking about Rice, but this is going to be interesting with a short week, because it's triple option, but it's not Navy triple option. They run out. They do pistol stuff. They do a lot of they do shovel passes. There's a lot of crisscrossing. I know we see that with Navy, but you know there's a lot of pre-snap movement that is I think it's just different from Navy, and
it's all shotgun. There is only shotgun.
It's all shotgun. Yeah. So short week to learn, especially, you know, you're coming out of a physical week. It's going to be Bloody Tuesday today, according to Marcus Freeman.
I find that really interesting. I think so. For people that don't know, Priester, he's your reference to Bloody Tuesday. They've always said that. Freeman finally said it, but he was saying it was going to be no pads today, and then he changed today. Like on the flight home, or
he was thinking on the way home that, yeah, we'll keep him out of pads. He's not going to do it. And you know what? I don't think that's so bad.
Drew, do you think they'd be having Bloody Tuesday if they hadn't had bad week twos in Marcus Freeman's three of Marcus Freeman's four seasons?
Maybe not. Honestly, I feel like we've seen enough September struggles in the home opener against a group of six teams. And probably isn't taking any chance, especially as you mentioned, against a defense or an offense that might be a little different than what they're expecting to. They're going to need some physicality and things like that. And I mean, if you go back to the Northern Illinois game, like that, obviously some fluke things happened, but Northern Illinois was probably the more physical team that day. And that is the one thing you can't let happen against a team that you significantly overmatch everywhere else.
We'll have a lot of Rice talk on Thursday, but coming up now, more Wisconsin, more big picture views, and a little bit of micro level Wisconsin analysis as well on segment two, Burning Up the Boards. We are back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Not surprisingly, we had a lot of offensive questions, and one of them on the wide receivers. This one, Denver Maximus. Is the low number of targets for Greathouse and Graham a result of poor chemistry with Carr? Given that neither player recorded a catch during games prior to this season, will Carr be able to develop a rhythm with either of them before injuries occur or major matchup arrives? Tim Priester, let's start with that before we get into a little about the offensive line affecting the passing game.
Well, it's a bit of a concern. I don't think that there was a chemistry with Greathouse before Greathouse really encountered his hamstring issues last year. And then we didn't see any semblance of, well, that's not true. That 18 yarder that Carr threw to Graham was a pretty one. Yeah. I mean, it's a concern. It's something we talked about during camp that, you know, it's one thing to do it in practice. It's another thing to do it in a game where, you know, everything has to be instinctual and you can't think about it. You just do it and you're open and you get them the football. So I think all the many of these questions are things that we've been talking about and we've addressed. And I'm not sure that there's an answer to that right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Like, I mean, we know from that CJ Carr puts in the effort to develop that chemistry and learn the nuances of how they might run routes a little differently and all stuff like that. So I don't know that part is definitely a problem, but there is definitely, like, I mean, he clearly trusts Jordan Faison a lot more than maybe he does at this point in time. Like, he talked a lot about how great it is to have Greathouse back during fall camp and stuff like that. But again, his Greathouse's best games came before he was the guy who was, you know, throwing the ball to him. So there might just be time where he needs to learn he can trust him. It was a little close earlier on and maybe he leaned on Jordan Faison a little too much. I don't know if I would say that for sure, but you know, these next few games will hopefully for Notre Dame's sake be a good chance for him to get used to throwing to those guys in game and building trust and things like that.
I want to give the number of targets to the wideouts this past weekend. Faison caught four passes. We all said we could have sworn it was more than that. But he was targeted eight times, so 4 out of 8, that's not a great percentage. Gilbert was targeted 4 times, caught 3 passes. Greathouse was targeted. Greathouse did catch a pass. So 1 target, 1 catch for 6 yards. And then Mylon Graham, no catches with the 1 target, but he did have the 1 that was negated by the penalty. Yeah. So, no, not a great percentage. You need to get the football in the hands of Jordan Faison. You hope to be more efficient than 4 out of 8.
And we might feel a little differently, too, because I think that was the penalty. That was the Anthony Knapp holding call, potentially, that negated it, which was a bad call. So maybe if that doesn't happen and we see that and he runs after the catch a little bit, too, like maybe we feel a little differently about how the Graham performance was.
Tim and I both had an issue with a 3rd down throw by Carr that should have been could have been intercepted to Graham, but I think it could have been intercepted because Graham didn't compete for it. Tim, remember, he just stuck his right hand out.
Yeah, and then watching the replay of it, the pass is offline.
Yeah, but
you've got to make an. It should be like a life or death situation for a new wide receiver at Notre Dame. He should be sprawling forward. I don't know. Maybe it got on him a little too quickly. But just it the optics, which I hate when people say that to me. The optics, but the optics were not great with that. It just wasn't the kind of effort that you'd like to see.
5 games with CJ Carr, Greathouse has been targeted 9 times.
Yeah, and you pointed that. I mean, that was the case exactly last year, and you've pointed that out before.
4 catches on 8 targets. Yeah,
I think there's something to that. I really do.
We talked a little bit about question number 2 here, but we'll kind of hone in for the future. 6'18" Irish. Do you think we'll see a more aggressive defense in future games with a less athletic quarterback, but one who is more accurate as a passer? And Statman 72 wanted to know if we should be concerned that they didn't get much pressure until they knew Wisconsin was going to pass. I think the point is, at that point, it was time to unleash the pressure, Tim Priester.
Yeah, I'm thinking, when I read that first question, I was thinking ahead, because you've got to be careful about what you, Rice isn't going to run things anywhere close to
that. No, right, not the Rice game.
I understand that, but 4-man rush, and Marcus Freeman explained that there weren't that many opportunities. I get that. I said after the game, and I think it's true. You know, and I addressed this, Tim, and tail of tape today. I had Boubacar Traore as the number 4 player in the class. I had him ahead of Jordan Faison, Anthony Knapp. Who else did I put in front of him?
Oh, you mean now?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you had him ahead of Faison for sure in recruiting, but there is no, you're saying.
No, I'm talking about our summer rating.
Yeah. Yeah, when did you think he didn't play? And you're saying he didn't quite play like the 4th best player on the squad.
No. And it's time for him to do that. And again, he was going against a guy that didn't play all last year.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, as we mentioned with the stats earlier, like the pass rush was dictated by Wisconsin's game plan a little bit, and they were probably did a better job when they actually had opportunities. And I thought Francis Brew, I was like impressed with what he did getting in the backfield and stuff like that too. So I do think maybe they can generate a little bit more of a pass rush up the middle than what we've seen at least last year even. So I get why there's concerns, and you obviously want to see them being able to win against, you know, Miami further down the road, which is also an offensive line that's a work in progress. It's going to get better too by November. So it's going to be a little bit on which units get better. But I think Notre Dame does have a lot of experienced players. And I think I agree with the Traore point too. Like, he's a little bit of Isaiah Foskey in him, where he doesn't generate as many pressures for the number of sacks he gets. Like, usually that's like a higher pressure number for the number of sacks. And Traore might have a little bit of that in him, where he makes plays at certain times, but he's not always in the backfield like Julian Okwara was in 2018, where he probably could have had even more sacks given how many pressures he had. I think it was over 60.
Foskey made sacks against bad teams. I mean, he put up numbers. He put up sack numbers. You know, Traore's not doing that. And I don't want to put everything on sack. It's the pressures that Bryce Young had on Sunday were extremely important. But I getting back to the question of 6'18" Irish, yeah, lane integrity was absolutely important with Colton Joseph. And they did a great job of that. I realize that maybe optically it's not exactly what you want, but they did a great job of executing that plan against Colton Joseph.
Our next question is from Grandview South. One realistic player you would like to see grow in his role against Rice so he can be used against MSU.
So one realistic player for this week that will matter more the next week. Jonas Walton. I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah.
I see Jonas Walton get his feet wet so he can add something to the backfield.
Yeah, and I think that would be a really good idea. I think that would be something to, you don't have to wait till the game is pushed out of reach or anything like that. I don't know. One of the younger receivers, do you want, like, if you want to take the top off, let Bubba Frazier run a go route. I know that's kind of like a cliche that puts your fastest guy out there. What's the worst thing that can happen? Let him run deep and you overthrow him. I'm not sure how close really Bubba Frazier is to that, but you know, maybe you want to get, I don't, is Devin Fitzgerald ready to take some snaps?
He's not on the depth chart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
I like Frazier and Walton too, because I think they add another element to the offense that maybe isn't totally there, especially with Walton. I mean, O'Malley and I talked about this offline a little bit too. Like some of those, you know, that 16 yard run by Aeneas Williams, is that a 30, 40 yard run with Walton? Yeah. You know, he does have a little bit of that speed. And if you can get him in there and get him a crease, like he can give you some of those explosive plays that the offense isn't going to get as many as they had with Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. There's no way they could do that aside from, you know, winning some lawsuits that get them back from the NFL. But that's not going to happen. So they need to find some ways to generate that out of the backfield. And he's their best bet to do that if they can get him going.
Tim, I would, if this wasn't Rice, if this was a conventional offense, I would say Rodney Dunham for this question.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But he will probably play. He might even play less because those guys don't get a lot of work. Remember, Bryce Young was trending up in 2024, and then he had to sit for two of the four games with Navy and Army on the schedule right there.
I believe Traore didn't play against Navy last year for that reason.
Yeah.
I think he was a healthy scratch, I want to say.
Well, he had not practiced against them the previous year because he was already out with an ACL. So it's tough. I mean, you got to change things up. Now he'll have to play now. I mean, you're in your third year.
You're right.
He's seen some of it.
We have a question from Irish Fan for Life 30. Right or wrong, besides CJ Carr, the Notre Dame offense doesn't really have anyone that would scare a playoff defense.
I think from a skill perspective, a skill player perspective, I agree. I think Faison could get there by the time we get further in the year. Obviously, I'm high on him. But I will say, I think Anthony Knapp definitely scares opposing defensive linemen. I mean, you watch even some of the film. He's pretty nasty out there. He's assignment correct. And if you get stuck with him on a double team, he's going to put some people on the ground too, which not the pancake blocks aren't always the best if you end up on the ground too, but Knapp is at least one guy I think people are going to watch film and they're going to be intimidated by it. And as we mentioned in its analysis, he brings it every day in practice too. So you're always going to get that mentality out of him.
I did take it as skill position, and that's why I said I want to see Jonas Walton play against Rice, because you need to add something to this backfield. Tim, let's talk about, this isn't a guy that's going to scare people right now, but Kedren Young had a really nice play, and then we didn't see him anymore. I'd like to see Kedren Young get a little bit more time in the backfield too. Didn't you think he looked quick on the catch?
I did. We've heard that he's improved. He's a viable option in the passing game, and I thought he showed it. I think I said to you during the game, I'd like to see him get another touch because I thought he came out there and gave them a little bit of a lift. But I take the question as skill position. But Drew, your point about, I mean, going over the game last night, I thought Anthony Knapp was just sensational. Not only the execution of blocks and what he was doing, but his football awareness and what's going on around him and what his fellow offensive linemen are doing. He has a really, really great understanding as the play is happening in real time. I thought it was really, really good against Wisconsin.
There was one play I watched that Landon Tangwell did a film review of him that I mentioned in instant analysis too, but there was one play where it wasn't, I'm not saying it was the Quentin Nelson Georgia play, but that no one picked him up and he just saw something else to do and like ran over the other side of the field. And right as Craig was getting off of block to go pick somebody else up, he just punished the guy into the ground. And yeah, it just spoke to that awareness you're talking about where he didn't have anything to do and he found exactly what to do at the right moment.
By the way, it's supposed to be Quincy Porter and Mylon Graham that are scaring opposing defenses. That's why they were picked up. Quincy Porter and Mylon Graham are supposed to be downfield threats. And quick, one of the first thing we said about Mylon Graham was right. He looks different when he runs. Well, he better start looking different when he runs by mid-October.
And of course, Porter is your prototypical, at least size-wise and composition, prototypical boundary receiver. Yeah.
Next question from Callahan Auto Parts. I know it was the first entire game, but it seemed like there was very little rotation. Gilbert had to play every snap. Mylon Graham only got 16. Keon Keeley only had 17. But do you think coaches don't yet trust some guys, or they just felt top guys needed high snaps before a big gap between good competition?
Drew, go ahead.
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I think with Keeley, I mean, Bryce Young, I think, is going to play a lot. But I also think if you trusted those guys more, they'd probably be on the field more. Or maybe they would do a little more of changing the rotation up a little bit to get Graham and Greathouse on the field at the same time or stuff like that. If Graham were that impact player, and we, you know, saw more from Greathouse too. So I think it was a little bit of like they have later times to, you know, break them in. For instance, as we've talked about Rice this weekend, and, you know, that was still a Luke Fickell coach team, Marcus Freeman's mentor and all that stuff. So maybe there was a little bit of just like taking that game a little bit easier and keeping the guys in early in the season. But I think if they trusted Graham to do more, he would have been out there more.
I agree. I think it is a combination of both. And then, you know, I mean, you want to trust these guys. Okay, beyond the wideouts that played this past week, there's Quincy Porter, who's hurt, Bubba Frazier, who's a freshman, Cam Williams, who just isn't in the mix, Jerome Bettis, who's inexperienced, Devin Fitzgerald, inexperienced, Braden Robinson, inexperienced, Dylan.
But they're not even the varsity, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like options, you don't have a lot of options right now.
Yeah, I think that if you just look at Notre Dame's openers, like Chris Ash played 22 guys Sunday. He played 22. Al Golden played 22 guys against Texas A&M. They don't trust that many. Mike Denbrock in his 3 years played 20. He played 18 against A&M. He played 19 against Miami. One guy played one snap, Ty Washington. It's trust. They don't trust you yet. And by the way, they played 20 guys, the exact same number against A&M, against Northern Illinois. That wasn't the plan, but they found out they couldn't trust guys, and they played only what they could. It is definitely early season trust. That's why coaches say it would be malpractice for me to put him in. They're going to put plenty of guys in at Notre Dame against Rice and Michigan State.
Which I will say,
it goes okay.
We're obviously looking at this from a negative point of view, but with the defensive tackle rotation, the fact that they went six guys deep right off the bat when they, you know, could have just stuck with four bodes well for even as they're dealing with the Anya injury. They did trust six guys, which I think is significant.
Yeah. It was brought up after the game that, you know, Matt Jeffrey, I don't even know how many. Did he get snaps? I don't even know.
None. They only played four wide receivers until Jerome Bettis came in for a snap at the end, two snaps.
You know, his best position is Jordan Faison's best position.
He is a straight up backup, that's for sure. He is nowhere near an or Matt Jeffrey. He did start on kickoff, by the way. He and Talich and someone obvious I'm forgetting, Madden Framo, had the most special team snaps on the team.
Our next question is from Shame on Me ND. How would you characterize Marcus Freeman's team in season openers? I don't mean from the record, as he's had some difficult opponents, but more so how the team plays.
Less impressive than as the season progresses. Like I remember sitting at the Miami game, throw out Ohio State. They played as well as they possibly could have against Ohio State. They were a 15-point underdog, and it came down to a double safety blitz. So throw that game out. Texas A&M, we called rock fight for 6 months. It was a rock fight. Northern Illinois was really bad. Everything about it was bad. Miami was frustrating as hell. Texas A&M was frustrating as hell on one side of the ball. Wisconsin was frustrating as hell for 1 week. I mean, for one half, and then very good. They're not great early in the season.
Well, they beat A&M at A&M, but...
Right, but it was, I mean, no touchdowns in the first half.
Well, I know, but I mean, you're at a Texas A&M.
Somebody, you had to beat one of these teams.
Well, I know, but they didn't play poorly against Texas A&M in 24.
It was going to be a rock fight, but yeah. if you played four good teams, A&M, Miami, and Ohio State. You lost three. So it's okay to beat A&M once. You should beat them once.
I think
we can criticize Marcus Freeman in September, can't we?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not trying to defend anything other than, you know, what they did at A&M in 24 was significant. That's all I'm saying. There's a bit of a pattern other than that game.
Yeah, I do think it's fair too. They do seem to play more conservatively early in the year, whereas I think the aggressiveness and some of the different things they're willing to do. And I mean, even the Miami game plan, obviously that's Carr's first start, the environment, that defensive line, like, and get all that. But it was what we ended up seeing him turn into, and why you have a guy like that as a starter. They went away from that. It was a lot of check downs and some of those things we even saw early in the game on Sunday too. So maybe there is like a, hey, let's just ease into it and not make too many mistakes to start the year and then kind of build on that. But he is a guy who likes to take risks, and I don't think we necessarily see that in game one or game two.
Yeah. He's 4-5 going in on his first two games in his career going into Rice, and he will be 5-5. So we'll have to revisit this next year, because he's 4-6 after this weekend. We're going to have an entire podcast dedicated to what's wrong in the first 2 weeks of Notre Dame football, because there would be no excusing that.
Question number 7 is from Martin Evenflow. Aeneas Williams and company are never going to be Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, but 187 total yards and 3 TDs from the top two backs is damn solid. Should the concerns on offense be more geared towards the wide receiver room?
I think we all agree with that, but I think the concerns on offense, and Drew and I talked about this a little bit during or after incident analysis, was the first half offensive line, because I don't know what was going on with protection and also the blocking for the running backs. I don't think the running backs played poorly at all. I don't think they had room.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that too. I think once they have a little bit of space, and I mean, it's great if you get 50-yard runs on plays that should have been tackles for loss too, but Notre Dame can be a very good offense if you have guys who are consistently, you know, averaging 5 to 6 yards per carry and picking up good gain. So I agree. I think the blocking was bad, and maybe the mentality changed a little bit too, but I tend to think like things were just kind of getting clogged. I don't know that they needed to run Cooper Flanagan up the middle as like an insert blocker as much as they did and things like that. That probably gives the play away a little bit too. So I think I agree with you, O'Malley, that once they started blocking well, the run game looked good, and that helps with the passing game as well.
Well, and I think it's a great question, a great point. 187 total yards is 187 total yards with 3 touchdowns. And if you can't push the ball down the field as consistently as you would like with your wideouts, then you need to get the football out there in some other ways, and that means running backs and tight ends, and Notre Dame tried to do that. The problem with the tight end part of it is that Eli Raritan averaged 15 yards a catch last year, and until Ian Premer and or Preston Frizzell develop, I don't think the current tight ends Notre Dame is using is capable of, you know, stretching the field to the extent that Eli Raritan did. But yeah, you know, but you still need to run the, first and foremost, need to be able to run the football. But I agree with you guys. I think a lot of the problems in the running game that was offensive line related in the first half.
And I mean, your point to 187 yards is a great one, because it also was zero garbage. Sometimes you can come out of a game and be like, oh, right, yeah, 65 right. yards on that last drive. But that was, I mean, they were playing ones versus ones, trying to salt the game away. And they did exactly that. But I think your point earlier, by much, I think you both said it, Nolan James as a receiver is better than Nolan James as a running back. But that's fine. The yards count.
Okay, Mike Denbrock's got to come up with some creative ways to take advantage of that.
Next question from Arnez Battlecry. What was your overall take on the Lambeau Field experience?
To get out of your car and to look up and to see a stadium and it says Lambeau Field on it, sends a chill down your spine. I'm old enough. I've said this too many times. I'm old enough to remember the first Super Bowls, and that was Green Bay winning the first two. And so actually the Green Bay Packers were a big team in our household then. So I watched those. So, you know, I mean, the whole Green Bay experience, it's pretty wild to think that there's an NFL team in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I don't think something like that couldn't happen now. But, you know, cool stadium. We sat too far up like we usually do in the press box. But I didn't get a chance to walk around a whole lot and tailgate and get into the whole Lambeau Field experience. But you kind of feel like you're in it's hallowed ground when you go to a place like that.
Yeah, I think it was cool, like, driving in and you go through, like, it really is just in the middle of a neighborhood, and that feels different. It reminds me a little bit of South Bend, especially before they started tearing down all the houses on, like, Angela and Notre Dame Avenue area. Like, it felt, how did that, like, kind of feel? It feels, even population-wise, like, metropolitan and in the city, like, it's almost exactly the same to South Bend. So it kind of just reminded me of my childhood going to games a little bit before all those houses got a lot bigger, driving down Notre Dame Ave.
Off camera, Jack Freeman's laughing as hard as I am on camera. As soon as you drop, put it in tearing down. It's like they just ripped it apart and left vacant lots there. They're building bigger houses, but yeah. I know exactly what you're saying. Like, I rode in with Priester and Sampson, and shout out to Pete Sampson's parallel parking skills, by the way. We just running going down the street. It's just a bunch of houses and side streets to get to Lambeau Field. And like, there's an Ace Hardware on the corner. I'm like, oh, you turn left at Ace Hardware to get to Lambeau Field. It's, you would never true. Have that somewhere. Go to Hard Rock, a little bit different than Lambeau Field. But yeah, not only do you turn left at Ace Hardware to get to Lambeau Field, there is also a playground on the campus of Lambeau Field. There is a little children's playground for people to go on slides and swings. And I don't think you're going to find a lot of places like that. It's a unique spot. It was fun. And I also thought it was fun when so many Notre Dame players were excited to do the Lambeau leap after the game. It was in the end zone where I was standing, and it just looked like they immediately morphed into like little kids that were dying to do a Lambeau leap. And Sean Sevillano did it.
He scaled it. Nice.
My wife was sitting right there at the game, and she did help at least one player. Couldn't quite get up. I won't say who it is. Couldn't quite get up there, and she helped pull him up. And it was her proudest moment of the game.
Was it a wide receiver that couldn't get up?
It was not.
All right, too soon. All right, there was.
I didn't realize that Sevillano had such a vertical jump.
It's impressive, actually. Our final question from M. Lindberg, channeling Denny Green. Are we who we thought we were?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think the start of the game is cause for pause. I don't think any of these things are something that we overlooked, maybe didn't emphasize nearly enough. But let's see. Look, first game snap judgments can be dangerous, and you don't want to overreact to it. But concerns about the deep ball, some concerns about the offensive line that maybe got straightened out in the second half, didn't like to see some of the mistakes in special teams. You know, it is what it is. You have CJ Carr, and you're going to have to find a way to really accentuate maybe the best quarterback that you're going to have until who knows when.
I think yes on defense. I think even the Sanders mistake is something we saw as the type of mistake that he specifically can make. But I think they were really great on defense. I thought they'd be a little more put together in offense, especially early on. And maybe it was conservative. Maybe it just was that they needed a different offensive lineman. But I think they're in special teams. We're not used to those type of mistakes. We're used to Notre Dame doing the punt blocking, not getting their punts blocked, and not an ideal way to start with your brand new punter, first time punting in a college football game. But yeah, they definitely have some other things to clean up. The good news is that the schedule sets up for them to be able to do that.
The list of concerns this year were lower for the opener because they played it. They didn't play Miami. But the concerns were on Monday musings, and you guys agreed with, I think, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but most of these things: the early season offensive line, the early season wide receivers, the lack of explosive plays in the running game, the lack of downfield passing game, tight ends in the passing game, and the unknown that is the backup quarterback. Everything's fine there, except if they don't get wide receiver complement. Instead of saying they're going to make it to the championship game, we'll see what happens, you're saying they're going to make it to the playoffs, and we'll see what happens. They got to get Graham or Greathouse. Someone's got to show up at wide receiver.
You can't even think about, like, at this stage, you can't even think about making a playoff run. You've got to get some things straightened out. And I do think, even with whatever issues we perceive right now, they should make the playoffs.
Yeah. I think 11-1, you make the playoffs, but you better have an answer to the explosiveness. You just can't be perfect offensively like they're making CJ Carr be. The line will get better, though. That's the key. Like, the offensive line, Priester, you must have said it for 8 months. The offensive line will not be a finished product in game number one. Like, that is not a surprise. They were a little worse than we thought in the first half.
Only one,
a lot worse than we thought maybe in the first
only game. One starter on the offensive line started at their current position in the opener last year, and that was Ashton Craig, who tore his ACL a few weeks later and just got back too. So like, this, for as talented as they are, and as much as people might have hyped them up, like, to your points, like, this is a group that needs some time to gel and get together.
Let's face it though, I wrote this in Tale of the Tape. No matter what Notre Dame did, and they had enough blemishes that it was easy to be disappointed. But no matter what Notre Dame did in that game, virtually, it wasn't going to meet it wasn't going to meet the hype and the expectations going into the season. It's been 8 months, 9 months of absolute total leave no doubt hype, and they weren't able to match that right out of the gate.
Tell you what, I think Drew might be the only one here. They scored more points than I projected them to score in the game. I had 34.
I had 31.
You had 31. Drew, did you have one, or did you have
42?
Yeah, so you were, I mean,
well, yeah, they underachieved in my mind.
After all that,
Drew.
Yes, still did a little bit better. And we'll do better. We'll try to do better on Thursday when we talk about Rice. We'll be a little bit of study involved before we talk about Rice football. So last time I saw Rice, was it 48-17 when they came to Notre Dame? Tim Priester, was that Everett Golson's big day? I think so. Everett Golson throwing dimes to Will Fuller. It was the last time Rice came to Notre Dame Stadium. Also when Rocket was here, right? Notre Dame could use Rocket and Will Fuller for that one, but will not be there. We will talk to Marcus Freeman Thursday. We will have Gino Gaduli,
yes.
Players on Wednesday. Wednesday, everyone, not tonight because of the odd schedule. So until tomorrow's instant analysis, for Drew Mentock and Tim Priester, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.